Let's talk about education. Schools are shut down across the country. And as a nation, we're testing the limits of our education system. It's unprecedented and unfamiliar. That's why Verizon and the New York Times are working together to give every high school in America free digital access to Times journalism through July 6th. It's never been more important for students to stay informed and engaged with the world around them. Learn how to register your school at nytimes.com/highschoolaccess. Data rates apply.
Between tour cancellations, lost creative gigs, and shrinking ad revenue, the COVID-19 crisis is making it clear that the system supporting creative people is broken. Patreon offers a better way. We help creators make up lost revenue and build a more sustainable income source by offering a monthly membership to their fans. In turn, fans get access to exclusive community, premium content, and the chance to become active participants in the work they love. Check out patreon.com now and help change the way art is valued.
Hey everyone, it's John. I wanted to talk to you guys directly before we get into this new episode. It is Sunday night, and as you know, the country is in turmoil, and it's been unbearable, frankly, to watch the events of the last few days in America and not feel sick. It's also kind of impossible not to feel sick, knowing the long history of the indignities and the violence against the Black community that has led directly to this conflagration. Look, we recorded this episode a few days ago. Seems like years ago, but we recorded this a few days ago, and it's pretty boisterous. It's funny in so much as we're funny. When I was listening back to it this weekend, it felt very out of step with the current moment. So it was important for me to preface that with some thoughts. As someone who benefits and has benefited from the privilege that my whiteness has conferred, I want to be clear about systems of oppression. They are visible, they are invisible, that persist in this country and which have been present for decades and centuries before now. The right thing to do is to learn more, to be educated, to understand the history of inequality that has led to this moment. Maybe some reading would be helpful. I want to encourage everybody to read the 1619 Project, which the Times put out last year. It's a very important document towards a fuller and more robust and more balanced understanding of American history. I also would recommend Whiteness as Property. It's an academic article. It's one of the foundational texts of critical race theory by Cheryl Harris. There are also a number of books talk about how the privilege of whiteness has been activated in America and has been passed from some people to other people and also been denied to other people. You can read How the Irish Became White by Noel Ignatiev, who was the editor of a journal called Race Traitor in the 90s, which I also recommend, although it's hard to find. Maurice Berger, who was an art critic who wrote extensively about race. He was one of the first people to die of coronavirus a couple months ago. He has a book called White Lies that's also worth reading. The most crucial thing to do, though, is to listen, to listen, to listen. I presume if you are engaged with podcast, if you come to us, I'm sure you understand how much the music that you enjoy, regardless of who it's made by, is deeply indebted to Black artists. But to appreciate that art without totally understanding the context from which it emerges, in which it is made, increasingly feels inadequate, not enough. Look, Popcast, I know from reading you guys' comments and your emails and tweets, I know it's a refuge, and I know it's a place for people who want to think seriously about what's happening in America or the world, and who use pop music as the framework for that conversation. All of those uses for what we do are valid. They're all part of what I want to do on this show and what I hope that we achieve. That said, if this is not the week for you to hear a rowdy conversation with me and Justin Charity about mid-level pop stars stepping in it, I totally get that. I honestly wasn't even sure if we should put this out at all, or if we should just shelve it for a month or 3 months or who knows how long, but who knows what's going to happen in a month or 3 months or 6 months. So if you want to sit this one out, you know, you want to save it for later. If you want to save it for never, that's fine. I totally get it. It's all good. If you need a change of pace or something that's a distraction, maybe it'll help, which is why ultimately we decided to share it. And if you can't afford to be distracted right now, for whatever reason, political, personal, social, obviously, I understand. We stand with you. We'll be here for you whenever you want to come back. Everyone, please stay safe. Be with your loved ones. Try to take a moment to reflect on how each of us can be a site of awareness, progress, and change.
Do you want me or do you not? I heard one thing, now I'm hearing another. Dropped a pin to my parking spot.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your Were We Not Just Here of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Happiness is a butterfly. Try to catch it like every night. It escapes from my hands into moonlight.
You go away for 1 week. You take one precious week off. Folks, I've been working hard in quarantine, sheltering in place, popcasting in place. Verite, you're getting glimpses into my home office. We're getting glitches and feedback and super sus Wi-Fi. And you know what? Last week, just before Memorial Day, I was like, I could love to have just a week off. Just take not write, not podcast. It'd be great to have a little bit of time. What happens? I couldn't look at my phone without someone spiraling or saying something inappropriate or doing something that just was unnecessary, just stepping on one's own toes. And I realized, even though I was running through all these different ideas for topics for what the first summer podcast was going to be, I realized it was just not just staring me in the face, but slapping over and over and over again. So today on Popcast, we are going to talk about the self-own. We are going to talk about some of what has happened in the last week and a half with regards to Lana Del Rey and her posts on Instagram about how she presents herself and the reaction to those posts. And then Doja Cat. I mean, you know, we talked about Doja Cat like, I don't know, 45 minutes ago. And she had a very eventful few days where some of her mid-2010s online edgelord adjacent behavior came to light. And she has been doing a tour of apology and explanation. Those are the kind of prompts for what I want to talk about. We're not going to dwell. We're not going to get too in the weeds because it's not really about these individual choices or decisions, acts of self-presentation. I want to talk bigger. I want to try to understand how these things are functioning in real life. What is the trigger? Who is upset? Is there a moral imperative at play for pop stars in terms of their current behavior or their past behavior? Is there a moral imperative at play for people who are going to chide or critique pop stars? This is something that I feel like I'm constantly thinking of, and obviously no two situations are the same, but it's a philosophical, it's a Gordian knot, and I want to untangle it as best I can. You may remember we had a similar Gordian knot back on the Justin Timberlake Twitter, I guess, cancellation. We're going to not dwell too much on the word cancel because I don't think it's that useful of a term. But in the Justin Timberlake episode, the person who I held hands with as we tried to untangle that mess was Justin Charity, staff writer at The Ringer and pop philosopher extraordinaire. And as I was thinking of having this conversation, you know, what better place? Who better to walk with me down this, frankly, very treacherous and often unpleasant road than Justin? I want to be clear up front. We're not talking about major celebrities who have committed actual sins. We're not talking about the R. Kellys of the world. We're not talking about people who are expressing philosophically repugnant ideas. We're talking about low-level to mid-level famous people who have kerfuffles on social media, sometimes self-initiated, sometimes reacting to something. And how do those things function? What is the long tail? What is the long shadow? And when I need to get philosophical, when I need to understand the underlying motivations, the cross purposes, the unravelings and the ravelings of the things that happen between the internet, betwixt the internet, popular music, the mountain, the troughs, when I need to get
a whole inspect the deck intro.
That is exactly right. You know, it is Justin Charity on the line. Justin, help me, please.
Help you what? We in tiny chat now? Oh, why are we? What are you worried about?
Okay. Let's just cut right to it. We're going to skip the baby steps. We're going to skip the Wikipedia pages. We're going to get right to it. Why do people place moral and ethical imperatives upon pop stars who cannot possibly carry them? Why? What is the motivation? What's underneath it?
I mean, that's a really broad question, John. Do you have any individual examples in mind?
We got like 45 minutes. So look, we're obviously coming off a very taxing 7 to 10 day period on the social internet.
Yeah, everyone has been canceled. It's a wasteland of canceled
people. On this Memorial Day, we memorialize all of the pop stars we lost to poor choices in the last 10 days. What's underneath that? Because I do think, well, look, the two situations from the last 2 weeks, the Doja Cat situation and the Lon situation, I think function incredibly differently. But I do think there is a common underlying thread, which is there is this expectation of upholding some kind of moral, ethical, or philosophical value system that it is then revealed on their own accounts to actually not be the case. Why do people put that on them only to end up disappointed? What's underneath that choice?
Well, I mean, I actually don't think the choice is that mysterious, right? Like, I think it comes from the exact same place that like building people into celebrities in the first place comes from, right? Like, I feel like the most essential fact about the ritual we call cancellation, right, is the fact that let's specify that we're talking about celebrity cancellation. We're not talking about people who end up on the Summer Jam screen who are otherwise like non-famous, non-public figures. We're talking about celebrities here.
Yes.
I think you really have to sort of start from the realization that canceling people is fun. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's fun. Yeah. It's fun to do. And I think there are other motivations and there are other sort of politics that get weaved into it in certain instances, but it's also, I don't know, to me, it's sort of like as unreasonable as something like canceling a celebrity can be. I don't always know that it's any more or less reasonable than it is to appoint someone to be a celebrity with all that entails in the first place.
Okay, so two questions. One, is canceling a celebrity more fun than being a fan of that celebrity?
If you're a hater.
No. I'm saying if you're the same person, if you are the person who started as a fan and then moved to cancellation, are they both equally, like, which is more fun? That's number one. Well, actually, let's just do that quick and then we'll come to the next question.
I think this is the annoying thing about celebrity in a big picture way, right? Is that like, if instead of celebrity, if we just thought of people as musicians, right, then this would feel a lot simpler because you would have a world in which people enjoy music and you wouldn't really have this question of what it means to enjoy canceling someone, because we'd accept that we enjoy music and we respect and appreciate musicians insofar as they make music that we like, and that's simple. But I think celebrity being this nebulous quality that gets slathered on top of actual like talent, you know, artistic talent.
Sometimes. Occasionally.
I think that sort of means that the population of people who consider themselves fans of any given person, it's sort of a, it's a diverse population of people who are in it for the music versus people who are in it for the celebrity versus people who are in it for some balance of, I like this person as a musician versus I like them as a celebrity. And I think whether you enjoy cancellation or whether you enjoy this sort of turn, right? This sort of celebrity narrative turn really hinges on how much in general you apprise celebrity as a sort of currency, right?
Yeah.
A person who loves music and only loves music does not enjoy anything about cancel culture or celebrity culture. That's sort of my point.
Are you arguing that the primary vector of fandom currently is celebrity not enjoying of music for these people, for the people we're talking about.
Primary vectors, I would say if you're looking at social media, I think that's maybe true.
Which you absolutely should not. Just for the record, don't do that.
If you're looking, if you're setting your parameter to social media, then I think there's a case to be made for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That someone like Doja Cat exists as a celebrity more than she exists as a musician to a lot of people. And so fluctuations in her celebrity stock are entertaining in a way that almost trumps her actual music for a lot of people, not for everyone, and to varying degrees, right?
Yes. Doja Cat's a great example of someone whose public facing non-musical life is and has been quite robust.
Yeah.
Unlike other musicians who are equally famous or more famous, but whose public-facing non-musical life is not so present or heavy. So Doja Cat is in this particularly interesting position. I think on last week's podcast, or 2 weeks ago, sorry, I've been on vacation. I don't know what days are. The last podcast, I sort of said, you know, part of Doja Cat's defense ostensibly is, hey, I've been messy on the internet for years. You can't be mad about, you know, instance number 436. Where were you on the other 435? And which are now, of course, all coming to light. And she is just like swatting them down one after the next after the next. And I agree that I do think for someone like her, who has cultivated a persona on the internet that is very specific, very vibrant, and fraught.
Very fraught. Yeah.
There are people who I think are, whether or not they like her songs, they express their feelings about her through liking or disliking her personality, her presentation, her persona. The songs are merely kind of like, if the songs are the skeleton, but like the skin is all the other stuff, as far as people liking her or professing to like her. I don't see a lot of people on the internet being like, yes, Doja Cat did these things that are potentially dubious, but I really bang with these songs, so I'm going to forget it all. I haven't seen those takes. Maybe they exist, but I haven't seen those takes.
You're saying you want to see those takes, or I'm trying to get at sort of like what the hunger is for here, right? As opposed to like you're hungering for something that is not what social media is producing in response to this.
And this is why it's different from the Lana situation, because I do feel I am seeing a little bit more of that energy with Lana.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, we're not here to kind of assess judgment or to kind of like hierarchicalize who had the worse or the more problematic. We're not in that business. I want to be clear about that. We're not in that business. I want to observe and kind of try to understand why these things have functioned the way that they have functioned. I do think that with Lana, who has had a longer career, who has a probably more committed group of fans to her artistry, I have seen more energy and, you know, seen and heard more energy along the lines of, that was maybe not a great idea and maybe she shouldn't have doubled down, but her underlying argument kind of holds, and that allows me to kind of continue to be her fan or her stan.
Same.
I'm seeing more of that with Lana than with Doja. And I'm not saying one is right or one is wrong, but I do think that the way that Doja's persona, quote unquote, has been constructed leaves her a lot more vulnerable to kind of bad faith takedowns.
Well, I think the bad faith, though, comes like going back to the point of canceling people is fun, right? Like, I think there is a big disparity between the Lana situation and the Doja situation, which is that the Lana situation is lame and boring, right? In the sense that, like, what did Lana do? She said, like, a clueless white girl thing that's sort of totally in character for her.
Yeah.
But, like, in character for her in a way that feels like we've been living with that Lana Del Rey for 84 years at this point. Like, I feel like the old lady in Titanic. Like, it's something Lana Del Rey would say. I get it. Like,
yeah,
I get it. The Doja thing, I think an underrated element to the Doja Cat saga is that this isn't, like, most modern blowups, most modern digging up stuff that people have done on the internet, which is usually that stuff extends to, oh, we use the search bar on Twitter to find some bad tweets, which happened to Doja before. What's happening now is like an impressive, it's like Mindhunter season 5, right? Where the level of investigation required to piece together Doja Cat's tiny chat history and for the sort of clues that people piece together from forums to sort of form this composite picture based on what strikes a lot of people, I think, as a more sort of deep web profile of her web activities, as opposed to just, oh, she had some bad tweets from 2013.
And can I just ask a question before you continue, which is, because I don't speak that part of the internet at all. How hard was that stuff to find?
I don't think it's that hard. A lot of the clues, I think, when I was reading through the Billboard story, it just seemed like people screenshotting public forum discussions and maybe some people following up with text messages that got leaked and sort of helped piece a lot of the story with Doja Cat in these chat rooms together. But I don't think she's not on like the Al Qaeda forums, but it's still more complicated, and thus it feels a bit more intrinsically messy and secret and enigmatic that this stuff came to light, because it wasn't just, oh, she posted a thing on Instagram, or oh, she tweeted this in 2015 and somebody just dug it up using like two mouse clicks.
Right.
There's just something that feels more intriguing about the stuff that Doja Cat was up to on these webcams and in these songs. I don't know. It's mess in a really, really messy. It's the messiest kind of mess, and people love mess.
Yeah, shouts to Marie Kondo, a real one.
Like, Lana's mess was nothing. Lana's mess was, I mean, she's messy, but her mess was Marie Kondo compared to, like, people looking at that Doja stuff and being like, what in 4chan tarnation is this, you know?
Okay, but, and this is something, so we were texting. Part of the reason we're even doing this is we were texting about this yesterday, and I did a thing in text that you did not respond to, so that means that you're just, you have to confront it here. Okay. That's all this means. Whereas I sort of taxonomized the four categories of people who are mad about something, Doja, whatever, just four categories of people who are canceling. I guess it's Doja specific because I used her name. Four categories of people joking about this. One, people who like Doja and want better from her, and I presume for her. Two, people who dislike her and wish to scold her. Three, people who don't care about her either way but want to make a joke. Four, people who don't care about her either way but want to make a point. Now, and my contention was that a lot of the energy that we were seeing around Doja Cat is over party and whatnot was not coming from Doja fans who want better for her, you know, who have suddenly had like a moral reckoning.
Right.
And I don't think it was coming from people who were like, woke up the day before all this happened and were like, I actively dislike her. I'm going to undermine her. I'm going to undo the career that she has built. I don't think it's those two groups. I think it's the latter two groups.
Right.
If indeed it is that, I'm not saying it's invalid, but if indeed it is that, the chaotic energy comes from outside. The call is not coming from inside the house, coming from outside the house. To what degree does that chaotic energy hold sway, or should it hold sway, or should it not?
Would I even describe that energy as chaotic? The people who don't care either way and want to make a joke, and the people who don't care either way and want to scold her. I mean, I'm sympathetic to people who don't care either way and want to make a joke. Like, I'm not on Twitter, but like, that's the version of Twitter that I like the most of those.
We should have caveated all this by saying Justin is not on Twitter. Justin's off. He's literally off that. Definitionally, they're off that in the dictionary, there's one of those like woodcut illustrations of Justin.
The people who are coming at it from the perspective of, is not that deep, but this is funny. Like, that's sort of, I think, where I entered the car. Even as somebody who, I actually am a person who likes Doja Cat's music, but I, as a general rule and stuff like this, I get the perspective of a person who, like, I feel like in that case, you're not even describing a person who is looking for moral meaning or sort of a PSA.
Yes, right.
In any of this, they really do. They are just using Twitter for its God-given purpose, which is to get these jokes off.
Is that what Jack Dorsey had? Is that at Jack? Is that what is?
Yes.
That's what at Jack had in mind. Just get these. Just get these bars.
That's
off?
Exactly. That's what Nori had in mind.
Like, oh my god! Yeah.
That's the thing, though. Nori's perspective on the whole controversy. The whole, like, he's just like tweeting.
What did he say? I haven't seen.
Nori is like how I first learned about what was going on, because people sent me tweets where they were trying to explain what's happening, and I got the tweet from Nori that summarized this whole fiasco with Doja Cat's history on the internet as she in racial chat rooms showing feet. And I was like, yeah, that's the kind of tweet that's a good tweet about something like this. You know, sure. What I mean?
Okay.
But yeah, can you read four again? Because I think four, let's dwell on four for a second.
Yes.
The fourth characterization.
People who don't care about Doja either way, but want to make a point.
Yeah, I think that is what sucks. I mean, it's tough because it feels like, yeah, you can look at Doja Cat and see stuff that's interesting to talk about. Even if you're not a fan of her music, especially if you're not a fan of her music, you can look at... You can look at the apology video, the 30-minute apology video.
I should say up front, I've been on vacation for the last few days. Vacation, very loosely construed. I've been trying to not look at the internet for the past few days. So I have
you
not.
You should watch the apology video.
Why?
I mean, it's a fascinating document in hip-hop.
Is that
history.
The video? Is that the one? Where did she say that the original apology was a conglomerate affair?
Well, she opens the long one talking, she like playing snippets of previous attempts to record this particular apology.
Okay, that's kind of fire.
It sounds like she's kind of doing like a mix. It's like, it's kind of popping for a second. And then she sort of launches into a spiel of like, I just want to talk all this. I want to talk all these like accusations through one by one. And like, iconically, she's sitting in this video that's this long, like ContraPoints length apology video, wearing a white t-shirt that says hentai. And it's just like, what is happening? What is happening? And so it's like, you can look at the apology video. You can look at the weird grainy like footage of Doja Cat in tiny chat with internet weirdos.
Sure. Sure.
Like showing feet. As Noriega put it, right? And I get how a person who, you know, you're on Twitter, people are talking about this stuff. This stuff is in the discourse, even if you are not a person who is actively, like, been, like, you're not actively seeking out conversations about Doja Cat because you don't even care about Doja Cat.
Right.
I can see how you could look at some of this stuff and say, and, you know, form some basic judgments about, like, oh, why is she in these kinds of forums with these kind of people. These people are talking about like her and other like non-white people in certain kinds of ways, and she's just sort of letting stuff slide. Why is she ingratiating in this particular way? I totally get how a passive observer or sort of unbiased observer, you know, doesn't necessarily resist forming opinions about what is a truly bizarre situation at this point.
Indisputably, it's bizarre. Like, on the kind of fact level, it's bizarre. But I kept thinking about, wait, are you off Instagram? You're off Instagram too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I just, man, everybody, I just want, can I just pause and just say to all of our listeners, our beautiful, dedicated listeners, first of all, sign up for the Facebook group. Come join us. Hang out in the Facebook group. But sidebar, get on Justin's level. Get on Justin's level. That's it.
I mean, not during the pandemic. Don't tell people to get off social media during the pandemic. Stay on now, at least.
Okay, people, fine. Then get on his level. I brought up Instagram for a particular point, and I don't remember when you quit Instagram, but I think when you were still on Instagram, they had Instagram stories and they had like facial filters, right? Like, you know, yeah. Like face, whatever. Like you do a selfie and then you look like a rabbit or whatever. Right. That to me, category 4 of the taxonomy, Doja Cat's antics and the kind of discourse around Doja Cat is like the filter on top of a pre-existing concern.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's not about Doja Cat. It sort of takes the shape of Doja Cat, but it's not really about, I don't know. I'm speculating here, but that's how that feels to me. And then when that happens and it disappears as quickly as it arrived, what are the kind of moral implications, number one, for Doja Cat, and then number two, for the people who kind of like take that on and then drop it off?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I like that description, right, of just sort of slathering a filter on top of something and it not really having a real foundation to it. When we were texting, I brought up Kanye, right? And I was like, this seems to exist exactly in contrast with why a person might agonize about, you know, Kanye's politics, right?
Yes.
To me, that's a situation where it's like people reshuffled a moral foundation around Kanye in response to his, you know, Trump antics. But they did that because they had already built this whole infrastructure of overrating Kanye's political significance and his intelligence, right?
So it's sort of like, which he invited. Yeah. It's part of his discourse.
So that's two parts, right? He invited it, and the people who are party to those kinds of conversations about Kanye were already like, they had already built an infrastructure in response to Kanye's invitation. And so that's a situation where it's like people are sort of morally overinvested, but you can see how people painted themselves into that particular corner with that particular subject. Whereas Doja, you're right. If you take a similar level of moralizing or philosophizing about Doja Cat, but Doja Cat is what, 24, and she's new and she doesn't have any of that infrastructure around her, and no one put those kinds of expectations on her in the first place. So it feels like there's no there.
She also did not. I mean, right. this is the thing that I think perhaps I find most vexing about that situation. If there is a true, authentic, inviolable ideology to Doja Cat, if such a thing exists, it presumably includes the possibility of things like we have seen in the last couple of weeks. It is not premised upon being removed from those things. It is not premised upon not engaging with strange tiny chats. It's, you know, it's not built on any of that. It's built on the potential for something like that to have happened. That seems baked into the thing. And so then when people who either do not know that about her or do not believe that that's a viable life choice, which, again, we're not here to pass judgment on, but there are people for whom the potential for that to be part of one's life story would be a complete disqualifier. When that energy meets the kind of loose, quasi-chaotic energy that Doja was already kind of carrying, that's really where the disconnect is happening.
When I first saw this going down, I thought of it as like a crisis for weeaboo culture, right? Because I specifically recognize Doja Cat as, a lot of people have pointed this out, especially people who have done like YouTube videos about this drama, that Doja Cat is a weeb. She's like a forum anime, you know.
Yeah, can you define those words? Because you just like out here straight.
Weeaboo. She's like,
what does that mean?
like down to the fact that she's literally wearing this white t-shirt that says hentai in flame font in her apology video, right? Like, she is totally a forum brat, like a web forum brat. She's totally into those, like, those communities. You know, I don't know the specific history of, like, her on Reddit or her on 4chan or anything like that, but everything about her aesthetic, everything about her vibe telegraphs to me that she's a weeb, and she's been through some, like, anti-social web forum communities in her day. I do think it's fascinating to look at her and sort of see her really blow up in a very mainstream way, despite the fact that she otherwise does seem very much directly like a product of web culture that isn't just, oh, she has a Twitter account. It's like, no, she's been in the forum. Like, she's about that internet life. Like, right. I just see it.
And so don't you think, I mean, and again, not determining whether being about that internet life is a moral good or a moral bad, but isn't the fundamental thing here that someone who lived with that value set and that interest set rather successfully for X amount of years ran into the rest of the world who said that value set is actually not viable. That interest set is not viable.
It is, but I think the thing about Doja is people aren't... Maybe this isn't true of everyone. I do think that there are people who are trying to parse the difference between her being a part of certain communities or being adjacent to certain communities and, like, keeping her nose clean despite sort of having experience in these communities versus people who look at her and say she ingratiated herself into those communities in ways that were not a good look. Like, I know this as a, like, you think about stereotypes of, like, racist gamers or, like, really sort of anti-PC conversations on the internet. And it's just the truth that different, if you're a Black person, right, in these forums where it's not initially apparent who's Black, who's white, who's whatever, and who's not, just based on, you know, screen names and things like that.
And avatars.
In avatars, right? In a lot of conversations, a lot of people drag conversations to really racially charged places. Like, you know, there's a kind of person who will say, okay, I'm not gonna be a part of this particular sub-community within this particular medium. And then there are people who try to, I think in their own quixotic, youthful, foolish way, they try to get on the right side of the joke. And I think that's a real trap in that level of web culture, is a kind of Black person who tries to cosmic brain and get on the right side of a lot of this stuff. And to me, that's what Doja Cat is. She's somebody who, like, it doesn't surprise me that she's deep into the internet. But the thing that does take people back, even if you know that about her, is the degree to which she seemed to, like, play herself in trying to participate in a way that's like, she should have stood up for herself more, or she, you know, somebody with different self-esteem would have conducted themselves differently, I think is the point.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, not to tie it too explicitly to the current events, but there was a really powerful thing that Christian Cooper, who is the bird watcher, who had the police called on him for asking a white woman to leash her dog, that he said in one of his interviews, where he said, I will not participate in my own dehumanization. And he said that, and it was very concise and crisp and just completely spot on. And so what you're saying is there is an aspect to some of her choices that reads that way.
Yeah.
That she would or did or could or might.
And I think that hits a lot of people as, like, too real to see. You know what I mean? It's not just about she's run into these different sub-communities in these platforms. It's about how she seems to tend to conduct herself and attempt to ingratiate herself with people who she probably should have taken a more, like,
skeptical view of.
Yeah, exactly.
And now, so given that, should she be washed out the system?
I mean, no. Like, it is the idea that because she's a hot mess on the internet, ergo, she should get her out of here? Is that the idea?
Well, that seems to be some of the active discourse. And again, I think these are people saying Doja, the persona, has failed. I don't know if those, I don't know if the people who are saying that are delivering opinions about Doja the performer. I don't know if Doja the performer holds equal sway with Doja the persona. You know, I don't know if one's a seven and one's a 10 in terms of importance. You know, I don't know, but I feel like there is a discourse that's like the person who is this persona should be out of the paint completely. And because of that, if the music's got to go with it, so be it. And again, if we're talking R. Kelly, I think fine. Like, I'm at the stage of my life where, like, I hear an R. Kelly song somewhere. It's like I turn the radio dial. I walk out of the room. It's nothing. It's fine. It's the music is too wrapped up in all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And I want no participants. I don't want to participate in it passively or actively. Should this function the same way? Or whether it should or shouldn't, is it functioning the same way?
No. I mean, it's like using R. Kelly as an example. Like, I think you don't even have to. Like, R. Kelly's the extreme of extreme examples, because you're talking about violence. But I think even if you take someone like Kanye, like, my point about Kanye earlier is that, like, again, Kanye is not hurting anybody, strictly speaking. But Kanye is a guy where you can look at and say the saturation of his celebrity narrative and of his supposed significance, it sort of makes it very hard. It's like if you've invested so much into the idea that this person represents X, Y, and Z, like, you've invested real psychic energy and, like, word count in the case of a lot of critics into, like, particular interpretations of Kanye West.
Just at me, dog. Just at me.
But if you've invested that much into certain interpretations of Kanye and I'm not talking about on a you level, I'm talking about on a, like, people who I would say tend toward more like first person writing, you know what I mean? As criticism. That person sort of overhauls their significance and their meaning. Yeah, I see why a person has to bail on that. But Doja, it's just like, I don't know. She's doing, like, have people never heard, like, an ODB interview? Like, I don't know. Like, I just listen to some of this stuff and I think that, like, these are rappers. You know what I mean? They're rappers.
Right. Which is, and
rappers.
Which is to say, right, there is some flouting of norms that is allowed for, encouraged, tolerated.
Yeah.
You're basically like, when did people get so kind of tetchy about that?
No, I don't mean
what it sounded like.
It's not about when did people, like, I think people have always responded this way to rapper. I think people have always responded. It's just that, you know, I think maybe technological differences mean that these conversations are processed in different ways.
Yes.
But I get the basic, you know, I get the basic instinct to hear somebody say a bunch of disagreeable shit and say, I don't want to hear this person anymore. Right.
Yes. But although, do you think that most of the people who are saying that had ever heard anything from that person? That's the sort of the kind of gap between the kind of pushback and the actual lived experience of the person who's being pushed back against. That's kind of what's been interesting to me. I think in the Lana case, it's a lot more it's a lot closer. The all the circles that are all kind of engaging with each other do have the Venn diagram is like a lot closer to a circle there. Whereas in the Doja situation, it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah. It's weird because I think the first way you brought this up to me, right, was it wasn't even about should Doja Cat be canceled. I think the specific way you first framed this whole issue to me was, do we care about this? And that's the thing. It's sort of like I care. Again, this goes back to your four characterizations of Twitter, right? I care about it in so much as it's funny. And I care about it in so much as I think a lot of the things about the internet and about web culture that this represents are interesting to think about and to abstract out and to talk through in terms of how certain kinds of people grew up on the internet. But I don't actually look at this and think, like, this, nothing about this changes my opinion of Doja Cat. And again, I think it's to your point that even before I knew the specific thing or the specific things that she did, I always knew that Doja Cat was the kind of person about whom these things probably happened. You know, on some level, my brain already accounted for this. And yeah, that does make it sort of hard for me to look at this and go, unlike the Kanye case where you're taking a conception of a person and overhauling it, this is a truly bizarre and in a lot of ways offensive, but also in a lot of ways just confusing situation. But it's a situation that otherwise totally conforms to who I thought Doja Cat was.
I totally grant that. I think that a lot of people who are participating in this discourse maybe didn't have that kind of opinion or that kind of understanding or expectation of what Doja Cat's online life might have been like.
Yeah.
So I guess the kind of philosophical question that I've been preoccupied with is, what is Doja Cat's actual moral or ethical responsibility to those people who had no conception of her prior to, you know, 4 days ago or 6 days ago or whatever it is? What is her moral and ethical responsibility to those people?
Wasn't Doja Cat sniffing coke on Instagram live? Like, I don't know about that.
I know she said she thought, I think she said she thought Russ was cute. And that was, you know, clearly something was up when that happened.
I guess what I mean is, like, even when you ask me the question, right, you use the phrase, like, you're talking about the moral imperatives of Doja Cat. And I recognize that you and I are kind of on the same page and we're sort of trying to engage with the...
Yeah, it's just batting the volleyball back and forth. That's
the
all
moral imperative of Doja Cat. It's just like, nah, man. No,
but there are...
You get in the name of Jesus, right?
Like but there are conversations out there being had about this very specific thing.
Right.
Just because you and I don't necessarily think they're the right conversation, it doesn't mean they're not happening. And it doesn't mean... Look, Doja Cat, I mean, the part of her apology I did see was when she apologized for the first apology by saying that it was written in the interest of a conglomerate. Shouts to Busta Rhymes. You know, like clearly.
So mad at you for that. You had to bring Busta into this. Well, okay, but here's the thing: even accepting your point about there are people who
please
are sincere.
Accept it. Just accept.
Like there are people who are sincerely outraged and sincerely offended. And
I think that's real. I think it's real. Right.
I think it's real, but I also think about, oh man, shout out to the Billboard chart, right? Like I think about Nicki. Like I think about how many people were really upset about like Harriet Tubman era Nicki Minaj.
Why?
And yet, like, what did that mean? You know what I mean? I think it's a weird Schrodinger's cat situation where I don't doubt that people are sincere in their reactions to this. And yet I think that it's hard for me to conceive of this as the kind of moral objection that is really going to hold up as a substantial thing over time. It's not like 6 months from now, we're going to look back and go, oh, so it was insincere because people don't have that energy now. It's like, it's not that. It's just that I think it's possible that people are sincerely offended and upset, but that a large part of what's happening when social media, right, when we go through cancellation rituals, I really do think a lot of it is about blowing off steam and
absolutely
getting jokes off. And it's like, I do think that, I don't know. People can hold grudges and people can have like formally good points about why you shouldn't be in racial chat rooms showing feet. Sure, 100%, but I just don't. It's Doja Cat.
Okay, sure. Okay,
No.
Okay, all fair. But here again, I'm trying to do is ask the hard questions and try to determine some answer that feels even partially satisfying. Is there room now in this particular moment, cultural, spiritual, political, for moral equivocation or uncertainty in how we treat celebrities? Because look, I'm old enough to remember a time when I was a young person and not a writer. I was just a teenager, you know, who was like a fan of music. And you'd be like, oh, that person's really famous and they did this bad thing. That was before people who did bad things got completely washed out the paint. I feel like that's gone away in recent years. But is it possible that as more people, you know, are Doja or Doja-like or Alana and Lana-like and sort of say or do something along these lines that alienates a certain part of their fan base or creates, is there a word for an anti-fan base? Like basically someone who didn't know about you on Tuesday, but by Wednesday, they're your dedicated enemy, whatever that is. Like, is there room for that more and more?
I mean, the market says no, because the market has no way to account for that person, right? The market can't distinguish between a person who didn't know about Doja Cat until they had reason to distrust and dislike her versus a person who just still doesn't know who Doja Cat is, right? But
sure, but you're discounting the power of sentiment analysis.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, oh, okay, fair, okay. Oh my God.
Sorry, sorry, no, just putting it out there.
Industry John, yeah.
Industry J podcast hosted by Industry J. But I wonder, in the eyes of people who maybe a year from now, and this came up with Lakin on the last episode, there's this sense of like, you did this thing, I don't do that again. Like, we're still rocking with you, but like, I don't do that again. Is there more room for that as people who have led messy online lives all of a sudden become mainstream into celebrity and sort of don't know how to like condo-fy the mess? Like, just, you know, they just continue to be mess. And this is where the Lana thing comes in, because the Lana thing, I may be missing something, but that felt completely unprovoked in the sort of specific. I mean, look, I'm sure I'm sure it's carried over months and months and years. But in terms of the specific moment, it felt completely unprovoked. That's a self-own. That's a self-L. And I say that as someone who Lana was mad at for something I said in a review 100 years ago. You know, like, it's not that she doesn't pay attention. I know she pays attention, and I know she's holding on. I imagine she's holding on to stuff. So obviously she's been sitting on that, but I don't know why it came out the day that it came out. That I don't know. Maybe someone can email me, podcast@nytimes.com, to tell me if you know. But now people who are Lana fans now have to kind of have this additional layer of reckoning of like, I'm a Lana fan and I support her. And yet.
But that's a wrinkle, right? And to me, I guess the way I think
about it. I don't know. Is it a wrinkle?
This is what I mean about celebrity, right? Is this is why it feels like this is a conversation about trade-offs, right? It's like, that Instagram post that Lana had and the conversation that started and her sort of weird posturing about criticism in general. To me, it's like you can look at that as something that a Lana fan has to live with and sort of take into account to reconsider like how much of a Lana stan they want to be. But to me, it's like, that's just part of the overall calculation of what it means to take somebody who is realistically a musician, maybe a talented musician, but a musician, and to turn them into something else altogether, which is a celebrity. And I think that celebrity it feels like the alternative to a world in which people are getting canceled all the time is a world in which celebrity just means like a purely blandly positive thing.
Yeah, but I do think that that's a real framework that is existing in the world, that the situations that happened in the last 2 weeks, like, kind of like show to be lies, or they show much less tenable, because I think there is this sense that we can maybe collectively wash out all the bad actors, but obviously that's not true. And never has been.
I go back to my basic position, John, which is, it's fun to talk. And no, cause I really am trying to isolate what the theoretical disagreement is, right?
Do you think fundamentally the energy that we're talking about and have been for the last hour is group number three? I think it's between three and four. You think it's group number three. You think it's just people trying to get bars off.
I mean, no. I'm saying I in the ideal world, that's what something like this would be about. It would be about getting these jokes off. And some of the jokes cutting deep enough that they cut to a deeper truth and maybe make Doja Cat feel bad for some of her bad decisions, but they mostly exist as getting these jokes off, right? I think that's the ideal world. I think the real world includes Group Four, obviously, and Group Four is the group that I like the least, where it's sort of Doja Cat only exists as a content prompt, right? Her music may as well not even exist.
I mean, it doesn't in a lot of these cases, I think.
I totally can see that the person... I can see that all the kinds of people exist and that, the fourth kind of characterization that you made is a kind of person who has a sort of outsized role in cancellation rituals. And it's the most artless characterization. And so I like it the least. Because that the fourth person is the person who basically doesn't even like music, as you know, like... They just like arguing about stuff on Twitter, and celebrities are just sort of filling a cannon fodder role.
Yes. And then the thing that I think I'm sort of, I actually feel like I don't know the answer to this question. And I feel like it's unknowable at this point, but there is some sense that if you just sort of say in Group Four, you just sort of say, I'm making this point, and then that point somehow reaches Doja Cat's ears. Doja Cat, who is likely not previously in her existence, given much credence to those kind of points, that maybe you can successfully convert that person. Like maybe you can convince that person of the validity of the point, of the need to look critically at the self, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like maybe that's part of the long game here, kind of like bringing Doja Cat on board with that. Does that feel like part of the long game to you?
Maybe.
Like rendering her. Well, no, rendering her. You said earlier the idea that like celebrity becomes this kind of like flat platform for goodness, blank, you know, like quote unquote goodness. Is the goal to kind of like have someone like Doja renounce prior acts and behaviors?
Oh, but I thought that was characterization one, the person who likes Doja Cat but wants better for her.
Well, I don't know. I think that maybe that energy is coming from Group Four more than Group One.
Okay.
I mean, again, this is all, I don't know. These are all hypotheticals.
I think there's a strict difference. You can even simplify the four categories to two, which is like...
Has heard a Doja Cat song, has not heard a Doja Cat song?
No. But it's like... Like the kind of person who wants better for just wants somebody to be less annoying. Like whether, like, you know what I mean? Like I like your music and like, please don't embarrass me. You know, like that kind of reaction, which I empathize with, versus the kind of capital D, capital B, do better, you know, like 19 entry tweet thread about Doja Cat and the epistemology of Doja. I mean, the like metaphysics of Doja Cat, you know, I think that, like, wow. There are two different kinds of wanting better, and one of them is a sensible sort of, just don't embarrass me. Like I like celebrity being what it is means that if I'm a person who does in fact like your music and I like music, like I just don't want you to embarrass me. I don't want you to pull a Lana Del Rey and then I got to hang my head for a week where everybody knows I'm a Lana Del Rey fan wants to ask me like, well, what'd you think about the Instagram post? Like, just don't embarrass me. I think that's totally sensible.
Don't put me in that position.
Right. But the real tricky faction is the people who by do better, they're really talking about some grad student stuff that I just don't think has anything to do with Doja Cat, frankly.
I think it does have to do with Doja Cat. I just don't know if Doja Cat thinks it has to do with Doja
right,
Cat.
Right, that's better. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think that's, and again, it's all, I think it's all fair. It's fair to have that discourse, right? It's fair to have the discourse about it. I think the thing that I'm not 100% sure on is, does Doja Cat have to come back in June or July or in 2021 and say, I have absorbed these lessons, you know? And I will now present in a very different fashion because I have absorbed these lessons. Does Lana have to come back? And judging by her double down, that's not going to happen. But does Lana have to come back and say, I have absorbed these lessons and I will come back a better, more robust, whatever, more holistically ethical person.
Oh, no. See, I think both Doja and Lana are really, really stark examples of people who know that they don't actually have to do that.
Yes.
Right? Like a person you, and Kanye is that too, right? I think a person who you would maybe throw in contrast to that is someone like Taylor.
Yes. Right?
Like a person who does in fact agonize and sort of, I don't want to say capitulate, because again, it's not, I don't think anyone's forcing Taylor to do anything, but Taylor Swift is an example of a person who made a determination of like, okay, I have to be dynamic in a particular way. I have to be responsive to these critical concerns in a particular way that comes across as constructive and enlightened.
And where she wants to fall in the grand moral arc of life. That is something like Taylor is someone who is interested in being a certain way and being perceived a certain way, and for those two things to be harmonized.
Right.
I think Doja is someone who is okay if those things are not harmonized. I think Lana seems to be okay if those things, I think it maybe eats at her, but I think she seems to be okay living day to day with those things not necessarily being harmonized.
But that said, I think that, so you have these two archetypal like things that we're putting in contrast. I just think that practically there's little difference between what's going to happen to either of those archetypes based on, you know, Taylor going right where Lana went left. You know, I think they're choices. I think they're real choices that inform what the sort of narrative arc of a celebrity is in the long run. But I just don't know that on a level of, I don't think that either choice left or right is going to pan out to, you know, in as a result, Taylor ended up being more important than Lana, or like, I don't know that the material outcome really varies that much. I think it's just, I think you're picking between two different kinds of story direction or like character development. It's not really a choice between falling off or continuing to have a career.
And also may not be even a choice between truly moral acts and truly immoral acts.
Yeah.
Or truly ethical acts or an unethical acts. It may not even be that distinction. That's why I kind of say, like,
in a prisoner's dilemma type situation, mm-hmm. I would rather be with Lana than Taylor, but that's me. Ethically.
Wow.
Ethically speaking, game theory wise,
yeah. Shouts to all my game theory heads. I really did well in game theory, and I studied it. I just want to say that I don't remember any of it, but at the time, I did very well. So we've talked about the prisoner's dilemma. We've talked about Schrodinger's cat, and I think ultimately, and this is where this is kind of like the frictive note that I think we should like close on, which is, I think that there is, and I'm glad you brought up Taylor, because I think that's a really instructive example. I think the sort of test moving forward is, how do people who can thrive or at least survive when there is not harmony between how they are and how they are perceived? How do those people thrive in a space where that gap widens? And how do they thrive differently? Or do people who need harmony between those two things, are those the people who will truly thrive in this kind of environment? Because every time someone is critiqued, they rise to the critique and say, yes, okay, got it, moving on. Next critique, got it, moving on. Are those people, and Taylor is, I think, probably the most instructive example of this, although not a perfect one, are those people best equipped for this kind of system of call out?
No.
Okay.
I don't, because again, this is going to, I think there's a kind of person who would answer that question no, and mean no as a sort of like repudiation of cancel culture. And they'd mean it as a sort of like condemnation. They'd mean it in a sort of Joe Rogan sense. Right. And that's not what I mean. Say no. What I mean is, like, I just don't think, just functionally, I think the positive reinforcement is illusory, right? Like, I think all Taylor did by capitulating to a lot of the hand-wringing about her
politics.
Yeah, her potential political utility. I think her capitulation didn't really, like, it certainly I don't think, like, made her music any more or less good. I think all it really did was sort of show people that she's the sort of person who, if you bug her enough about something, will fold. Like, it feels like a lesson that, like, any parent knows.
Which is why you chose Lana over in the prisoner's dilemma.
Yeah, right. It's like if you bug her enough, she'll just fold and be like, okay, well, I'm afraid of my mentions, right? And again, that's not, it's a choice. Like, that's a choice. It's a totally fine choice. Like, celebrity is such an illusory thing in the first place that it's totally fine if Taylor opts for a model of character development that is responsive to something like that and dynamic and wants to be liked. That's a choice. That's totally a choice. I just don't think that choice is any more or less viable than the choice to turn heel and just be like, nah, this is it. Like I'm not going to be bossed around by public sentiment. And I think that the main advantage that posture offers is that you have a more static conception of yourself. And like, God, if I was a celebrity, right? Like, I have to imagine that one of the most overwhelming things about being a celebrity, right? Is the fact that there is a sizable public sentiment that at any given time is dictating what you should or should not be doing with your life, right?
Right, and may not be in line with your actual set of choices or your set of perspectives.
Right, so just from a psychological level, I think it's easier to be Lana Del Rey and just say, okay, well, I'm going to self-author my own values or personality or shtick or however you want to think of it.
Even if it looks bad.
Like, even if it looks bad, I'm going to tweet through it, as it were. And that's hard in some ways, I guess, in that it means that public sentiment turns against you in stronger ways. Or I don't know. It's like, it's harder maybe on some levels, but it at least affords you a more static self-conception. Whereas if you're Taylor, it's almost like you're assigning your ego to social media services that are themselves populated by disordered personalities that are over invested in celebrities, which is basically the last sort of person you want to assign any sort of ethical, like, adjudication to in the first place.
Exactly. It's possible that those motivations are also bad faith motivations masquerading as good ethics.
But regardless of what they are, it's just a lot more exhausting to have to respond to Twitter than to not, right? In terms of like how you express yourself and conduct yourself.
In conclusion, everybody is going to collectively, if you're listening to podcasts and you've made it this far, you now have to delete your Twitter account. That's the rule.
I mean, just get the jokes off, though. That's not, you know what I mean? It's like, you don't have to delete it, but just be less.
How about
corny.
We launch? Justin, do you want?
That Doja should have learned, which is just like, don't embarrass yourselves and don't embarrass me.
Definitely don't embarrass Justin, number one. Justin, should we go into business and just like have an alt Twitter that's just joke Twitter and just you can only be fun? On our Twitter, we don't kick Jabuki off and we don't kick Zach Fox off. We start with Jabuki and Zach Fox. And that's from whence everything else flowers from there. Is that the version of Twitter we want to?
The premise that's alt Twitter? That is still like human beings interacting with each other, and I'm just not like a fan of that as a general principle.
So okay, so that's the cue for you to hang up, I guess, since you're done interacting with me. Justin, as usual, we have arrived no further down the questioning arc than we were when we started, and perhaps we are in fact behind where we were when we started, but that is what I was hoping for. Thank you so much for taking this car reverse ride with me.
Yeah, man. This is the real racial chat room. This is
no feet.
I'm wearing the J. Crew slippers. No feet.
Barrel Hydro Mox. Hydro Mox gang. Let's go. Oh man. Oh, okay. Thank you, Justin. Let's go out with Miss Doja Cat, Cybersex. Oh, what a time to be alive. Living in a picture, blinging on my hotline. I wanna touch on you. You see me in my room. Wish you were here right now. All of the things I do. I wanna get freaky on camera. I love when I get freaky on camera. Before we go, it's JC Cribbs time again, doing the twirl of the air on chair. You know, I don't know if you guys saw, but a couple weeks ago after Andre Harrell passed, I wrote a piece about Jodeci and the unplugged performance of Stevie Wonder's Lately, which, you know, I've learned to be measured in my years as a critic, but I think I can say without being measured that that performance is one of the greatest musical performances I've ever laid eyes on, I've ever seen or absorbed. One of my favorite songs, one of the best songs of my lifetime, and also just foundational for me as someone who feels deeply about music. And so when I wasn't quite sure, I'd written Andre's obituary, and I wasn't quite sure what to write as a follow-up. And I just started watching old Uptown Records performances, and I got to the Jodeci performance, and I was just floored. I just got stuck, like, you know, mouth agape. And I realized that that's what I had to write about. I had to write about the man who made that performance possible. Anyway, that's a pretext. I wrote the piece. I think it was well received. People were excited. A lot of people really had also connected to that performance, which I was really grateful to see that it wasn't just me. And I posted it on Instagram, and Instagram is good because sometimes you're catching a different audience than people who are seeing it on Twitter or people who are reading in the actual paper or on the web. And I noticed in the comments a name that I was familiar with, but not someone who I know personally. And the name was H. Sammy Aleem. He's a professor. And I knew his name because in the 90s, there were these books of interviews with rappers. And you got to keep in mind, there's a lot of rap books now. It's becoming a thing. I imagine I will be contributing to that problem at some point in the future. But there weren't that many books back in the day. And I recognized his name, and I was trying to place it. And I finally realized that he was one of the people who worked on a book, and it's called Street Conscious Rap, which I have my copy here. Street Conscious Rap is a collection of interviews. I think this came out in 99, maybe. So it's H. Sammy Aleem, Charles Lee, and James Spady. And here are interviews with Kool Herc, Big Daddy Kane, Busta Rhymes, Xzibit, E-40, Big Pun, Heavy D. I mean, we're talking like a few dozen interviews. And I pulled Street Conscious Rap off my shelf to take a look at it again. I haven't looked at it in a while. And then I was like, well, Street Conscious Rap is a follow-up, because the first book that I remember coming from the same group of authors was called Nation Conscious Rap. And that came out while I was in college. And I'm looking now at my second copy of it. I don't know where my first copy went. I'm looking at my second copy. And Nation Conscious Rap was much more focused on ideology and religion. Sammy was not involved in this book, but James Spady and Joseph Eure were. Anyway, I got back into Nation Conscious Rap, and I was reading through it, and I started Googling around. And a thing that I learned a week or so ago is that James Spady, who was involved with these books and had a very, very robust career in letters, passed away in February. He was 75. And I'm regretful that I didn't get a chance to ever meet or chat with him. And I'm glad these books exist. Sammy and I have now been chatting a little bit, which I'm really grateful for. I'm glad to be able to get to know him a little bit. And anybody who is serious about learning about hip hop in the 80s and 90s should have copies of these books. Spady had a really rich life. He lived primarily in Philadelphia. He was active from the civil rights era all the way up through the 90s and 2000s, befriending a lot of artists, architects, people in the creative industries, wrote or edited more than a dozen books, a very, very rich legacy. And I wanted to honor that legacy by sharing a little bit about James Spady today, encouraging people to check out these books. And that is our show. We're going to go out in a minute with an act that is interviewed in Nation Conscious Rap. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Get involved in the Facebook group. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We'll be back next week. Until then, here's X-Clan. Grand Verbalizer, what time is it?
Grand Verbalizer, what time is it? Grand Verbalizer, what time is it?
African, very African. Come and step in Brothers Temple, see what's happening. You'll taste the bass flow coming from a zero. Tell me what a sissy know. Funk a lesson is a new flow. Stalking, walking in my big black boots. Living off the earth, eating herbs and fruits. The children await me by the mountain and the river. And gather round the fire for the scroll that I deliver. Let's speak about-